Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. We are very pleased. Our guest today is New York's senior U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer. After stints in the State Assembly and U.S. House, Schumer has represented New York in the Senate since 1999 and is the number three Democrat in the upper chamber, although he might argue with you about that. Senator Schumer, thank you so much for joining us.
Number 93.
No, but you collected all the money that keeps them in office. I remember that. And that was good.
I had a great deal of support from my colleagues, but we were able, the thing we did, which changed things around, is when I took over head of the DSCC, we had just lost four seats. Bush had won. And the message I got from Democrats is win already. But they had a rule. They did not intervene in primaries. So whoever won the primary, the DSCC would support.
And the DSCC is Democratic
Senate Campaign Committee. Yeah. So the rule I changed is we were going to find the best candidate, try to persuade them to run, and then make sure they didn't have a Democratic primary where we'd beat the daylights out of each other and always lose.
Fascinating.
And that was the formula that helped it work.
Didn't anybody point the finger at you and say that's wrong?
Some did, yes. But at that point, there was such a thirst for people to win that they went along.
As we sit here today, who is going to win this election, Obama or Romney?
If I had to bet, I'd bet on President Obama. And the reason is very simple. The number one fact of our political economy is that this is the first decade that middle-class incomes, median income has declined. There was a very good article in today's New York Times by David Leinhardt. I'd commend you to it. But I've been saying this for a year. And when middle-class incomes decline, it's a different America. We are founded on a growing pie. And when middle-class people no longer believe in the American dream, which simply put would be, if I work hard, no matter who I am, where I came from, I'll be doing better 10 years from now than I'm doing today, and my kids are going to do even better. People stop believing that. It's a different country. So the focus has to be on helping the middle class. The president has done that. He's been very thoughtful and very careful, focusing on education, building infrastructure, scientific research. Romney, if he had a sin, it would be narrowness. Now, that doesn't sound like much of a sin, but in this day and age, it is. Romney's view is if he and people like him do well, that'll solve the country's problems. I mean, they believe it sincerely. Now, I want people like Romney to do well. I want us to have successful business leaders and stuff. But it's not enough. It's not going to help a middle-class family pay for college. It's not going to help people get decent health care. It's not going to rebuild our ancient infrastructure or create the scientific research at our universities that spun off industries like telecommunications and pharmaceuticals and internet that employed millions of middle-class people.
But isn't the danger for the Democrats that the middle class often see themselves aspiring to have wealth like the people, the so-called 1%?
Very good point. One of the things I'm proudest of, because I worked hard on this, is for the first time, when you ask the public, who do you prefer on taxes, they prefer Democrats to Republicans. Why? Because what Republicans did since the day of Ronald Reagan is conflate the middle class and the wealthy. They give the wealthy a tax break of $250,000 per family, middle class person $500 a family, and everyone's getting a tax break. We said this country can't afford to give the wealthy tax breaks, or we're going to cut all these other programs, education and transportation and things like that. And we worked long and hard on it, persuaded the president, helped persuade the president that this was the right way to go. And now we have separated the middle class from the wealthy. So when the president gets up and says, I'm for no tax increases on anyone below 250, but there should be an increase for people above 250, American people buy it. And that's a big change. And that's going to affect the way we govern in the next year, too.
I understand that you've invented a sandwich. Is that true?
invented would be the wrong word, but you saw me eat one because I came here a little early.
I did. It's quite a thing.
It's called a shumwich, and my staff named it a shumwich. But you go to the Subway. There are more Subways than McDonald's.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Not, they don't have as much revenues because each McDonald's store brings in a lot more money than each Subway store, but there are more Subway shops. The shumwich is, you take the bread, I like that Italian cheese bread, but any bread will do. Roast beef, lots of tomatoes, pickles, and onions, mayonnaise, and a little bit of hot peppers. And it is great. And I learned this, the shumwich is not original with me. When I was in law school, I used to go to Tommy's Sub Shop in Boston. And he invented the shumwich. He served these as a hero. They called him up there grinders. That means hero sandwich, grinders. Yeah. And we've now have it here, and it's delicious. And I recommend it to everybody, one and all, 6-inch, 12-inch. It's very, very good.
Check
by the way, yeah. I wanted to take my wife. We were going camping in Maine, but I said we were going to stop for lunch in Boston. We were driving up.
Jewish and people go camping?
Well, we were trying it. We weren't too good at it. In any case, I said, let's go for lunch at Tommy's Sub Shop. So instead of driving around Route 495, we drove all the way into Boston. And guess what had happened?
It was closed.
Tommy's became a boutique.
Oh, really?
In the gentrification of North Cambridge.
Because I remember, Chuck, not to prolong this, there was a place at Harvard where they had these roast beef sandwiches that were 10 feet tall. I've never seen anything like it before or since.
Yeah, Elsie's.
Elsie's, that's right, it was Elsie's.
Late at night.
You're a genius.
Well, no, I'm just hungry.
So what is your relationship with—
With Elsie? I never met her.
Elsie's. They were something, I've never seen anything like it before or since. There was a whole roast beef in every sandwich.
Elsie's roast beef sandwich, fabulous. And I would get it with a coffee shake. Occasionally, I'd dump the Elsie's roast beef and get a knockwurst. Ooh. We'd all go there at midnight. It was fun.
Back on to another subject. You and Senator Gillibrand get along extremely well, don't you?
Yes, we do.
Is that always true? Because we have a look into the United States Senate now with one of the great senators. How do people work that out, the two senators?
Okay, well, this is a very good question. There are a large number of senators, it's the only job where two people have the same job. And they're both, it's a high-up job, so they're naturally competitive and all that. And so oftentimes the two senators don't get along. There are stories we could tell. And when they're of the same party, sometimes they even get along worse than when they're of the opposite parties. So here's my little... So I got to the Senate, and Senator Moynihan was a mentor to me. I had known him forever. He had encouraged me to run and helped me run. That was fine. Then Hillary comes in. Now here you hardly have two shrinking violets. And for the first year, we would be elbowing each other and this and that. And we came to the conclusion, separately but about simultaneously, it'd be a lot better if we worked together. And we sat down and we started to have dinner every month. And we did, and it was much better for both of us. You know, there used to be these earmarks, which you could deliver projects, and most earmarks were good. There was the Bridge to Nowhere and all of that. We've reformed them since now we got rid of them, which I think New York suffers from. But in any case, Hillary and I would pick our earmarks together. And so, you know, the people who gave them out, the appropriation people, loved it. They didn't have to choose, should we give Hillary one or Chuck one? And we got double the amount of money that New York would normally get. It was great. And so we worked together well. We're still good friends. And so when Kirsten Gillibrand came into the Senate, you know...
Did you have a hand in having her appointed?
Well, Governor Patterson, who had the choice, asked me what I thought. He wanted a woman, which I thought was a great idea. And she was one of the people high up on my list, yes, because I thought she had done a very good job in the... in her congressional district. I always wanted to have an upstater. I always thought we ought to, you know, of the statewide tickets, just because the Democratic primary is so downstate oriented, sure. Democrats in New York should have an upstater. And so that counted in her favor with me and with Governor Patterson.
And she wins re-election as an upstater.
Correct.
Which is pretty
good. She lives in Brunswick, not too far from here.
Right, in Hudson before that, which is really quite something. My wife's hometown. So, okay, so let's ask you whether or not the Democrats are going to take the United States Senate in this election.
You mean keep it.
Keep it, yes. Well, take it again.
Yes.
Let's settle on that.
Are we going to take it again? The answer is yes.
Is this just palaver, or do you know that for
Well, I don't know it for sure, because no one can. Otherwise, I'd be a mind reader or soothsayer or something.
Right, right.
But here's what I think. I've looked at the races, and when we started out in January of 2011, everyone said, we'll never keep the Senate. Democrats had just gotten shellacked in the November 2010 elections, and we had 23 Democrats up and only 10 Republicans. How the heck are they going to keep the Senate? Sure. Three things happened. One, we focused and honed our message in on middle class and the economy, the issue I talked about before. Number two, Republicans abandoned the center. Most elections are won in the center. What political party would alienate the fastest growing group of voters, Hispanics, and the largest group of voters, women? But they did. And third, under Patty Murray's leadership, she's head of the DSCC, we've recruited great candidates, really good candidates, as I mentioned. Yep. That was a tradition I started and has continued and gotten even better and stronger. And so we have great candidates. So if you look, there are 16 Democratic incumbents running again. I think every one of them is likely to win. Claire McCaskill, who was looking bad, she did a great thing. You know, she put ads on the air. She knew she wanted this guy Aiken, who was the most right-wing of three pretty hard right opponents. Right. So she put ads on the air that said, don't vote for Aiken. He's too conservative. Here's what he thinks of Barack Obama. Yeah. And all the hard right people in the Republican primary said, oh, he's my guy, and they voted for him. And then her strategy was vindicated because
Not quite, Chuck. You will remember, of course, that there was one, as what we political scientists call, intervening variable.
Well, that's what I was going to say. But that was after he was chosen.
Yeah, but he was chosen. But he was still leading. He was still leading her at that point.
No, just by a little. Okay. He was the easiest one. But she knew that why her strategy was vindicated was she knew he would do things like this. And sure enough, a week later, he gets up and talks about forcible rape. How a woman's body would reject any fetus.
Even considering that, he's not that far behind her.
Oh, most of the polls showed anywhere from 8 to 12 points. In Missouri, that's pretty far behind. The president's behind by 9 or 10. So she's running 18 points better than the president. She's likely to win.
You mean behind in Missouri?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You pronounce it Missouri as opposed to, there's another pronunciation.
Missouri.
Yeah.
I pronounce it Missouri.
Yeah.
There's Nevada as in Missouri. And Nevada.
Yeah.
They like Nevada.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's New York and New York. Different parts of the state say it differently.
Sounds like the same thing when you say them. What happens to the Affordable Health Care Act if Romney becomes the president?
Well, he'll try to repeal it, but that's easier said than done. I was just with a group of leaders of the Albany Economic Community and somewhere health care. And, you know, their basic view, one of the people there who was head of a pretty significant sized health care company here in Capital Region, said, look, we're going to move in this direction regardless. We have to change. We have to, you know, get away from this cost-plus model, which is going to bankrupt the government and bankrupt private companies. So a lot of the changes that are proposed are going to be carried out by the industry regardless. But can they repeal it? Well, the question, and it's a little bit arcane here, is whether they can use reconciliation, which needs 51 votes, as opposed to the regular process, which needs 60. They'll never have 60 votes. The only parts you can pass by reconciliation are the budgetary parts. And there's so much in there that's not budgetary that I don't think you can't repeal part of it. That doesn't make much sense. So I think it's going to be hard for them to repeal it, even should Romney win.
And don't you think the fact that Romney is often credited with having invented the model gets in his way a little bit?
Oh, it gets in his way a lot. And now he's saying it. First, he was saying he repudiates what he did in Massachusetts in the Republican primary when he was playing to the right. Now he's playing more to the middle, and he's saying it's a good plan, but we should let the states enact what they want. Well, You can't really do that in healthcare.
Chuck Schumer, you're an expert on taxes, and there is a question of who gets tax breaks in this country. Can you help us with that one?
Yes, and it's good to distinguish tax loopholes from what the economists would call tax expenditures, deductions. Some of the deductions are there for a purpose and a good purpose. The mortgage deduction, help people own homes. The charitable deduction, help people, encourage people to give money to charity. The healthcare deduction lets you exempt, you know, deduct your healthcare costs so it's easier to pay for them. Those are things that should stay. No one's saying eliminate those in the code except some people who are very doctrinaire. Then there are loopholes, you know, a break for an oil company, a break for a company that sends jobs overseas. These are not general policy issues. In fact, one of the ways you can probably distinguish them is the general policy issues have a great debate publicly, and the loopholes are sort of snuck in the dark of night.
By lobbyists.
With the help, they have to have the help of some senator or other. But in any case, we should close the loopholes, but not get rid of the deductions. And the deductions help the middle class.
Easily said, but you've got these legions of fat lobbyists who come in and knock on your door and give money to campaigns and the rest of it. So how do you deal with...
Some of them are thin. Some of them are thin.
Yeah, because we know that. That's true. I apologize. Fewer
you
LC,
meant fat cat,
LC
but you
sandwich.
Said fat.
No, I said... I was going to say fat ass, but I decided that really wouldn't be the right thing to do, and then I sort
not
of changed
on a
it.
Family
no.
radio show
I
like this
I decided to
one.
Do it at the last minute to change the way that I was doing that. Okay, so what makes you think that, you know, these people are going to easily go into the night?
Well, quietly. They're not, but we have real needs here. We have our deficit problem is a real one. Now, I have always said that it should be balanced, that it needs revenues, and that means, and I agree with the president here, and I've been sort of one of the leaders on this issue, that we ought to go back to the rates at the Clinton era where there was plenty of prosperity for the highest income people. But bringing in those revenues, those money should be used for the deficit, not for funding loopholes. So there's going to be more pressure to close the loopholes and reduce the deficit than there has been in the past. Will the lobbyists prevail? I hope not, but in the past they have. But the pressure is great, and here's the greatest pressure. If we don't come to an agreement on the deficit agreement, which will have to close loopholes to get a deficit agreement, and both parties agree on that to some extent, tax rates will go up for everybody come January 1st. A, that's very bad for the middle class, whose income has been declining. B, it's very bad for the economy. Our economy is not roaring forward. You know, we're making slow progress. And you take all that money out of the system with increased taxes on everybody, you could get back into a recession.
Are we likely to see that change once the election is passed? You know, that people will take the need for this agreement more seriously?
I hope so. I think so. Yes. But it's got to be done in a fair and balanced way. We cannot let the hard right dictate what should happen here. It's got to be a balanced and fair approach, and that's what I'm for.
Tell me about the deficit. Is there any way that this country can lower the deficit?
We have to. I tell my colleagues, we are like a blindfolded man walking towards a cliff. And if we keep walking, we're going to fall off, like Greece fell off, or Spain or Italy is maybe going to fall off. You can argue whether we're 50 yards from the cliff or 500 yards from the cliff, i.e. when we fall off, but you can't argue that we are not close to that cliff. So we have to do something. But the Republicans are just doing it by slashing programs. The president has proposed a much more rational plan, which is to rely a good portion on revenues, because one of the top two reasons that we have this deficit are the George Bush tax cuts. Remember, Bill Clinton left us with a surplus.
How did he do that again, remind us?
Well, he had higher tax rates, and he kept spending. He didn't, you know, just slash and burn in spending, but he kept spending. He had Al Gore in charge of making government more efficient. There were actually fewer government employees in the year, federal government employees in the year 2000 than there were since 1969. He did a very good job. And we can get down the deficit without cutting vital programs to people.
Which brings up the military.
Well, there should be some cuts there. I thought the president handled it very well on the debate when Mitt Romney said, well, we have fewer ships than we had since 1917. And the president said, yeah, we had more ships in 1917 than we have today. And the president said, yeah, we had more horses and more bayonets.
I loved it.
He was great on that. And we, you know, too much of the military. Some of the military is very necessary to protect us in this new world of terrorism. But too much of the military is sort of left over from the Cold War. You know, making sure when the Russians come through the Fulda Gap in Germany that they don't sweep across all of Europe. Those days are over.
I'm Jewish, you're Jewish. I have a question for you. I had a certain resentment when Netanyahu came in here and involved himself in what is our election cycle this year. Look, I wonder what you thought.
For Netanyahu, for Prime Minister Netanyahu, to talk strongly about what Israel needs and the fear of a nuclear Iran, which is very real to every Israeli citizen, to Ehud Barak, who's from the opposite political party, fine. But you shouldn't influence the election. Now, Netanyahu will claim he was not attempting to influence the election. He was just defending Israel's interests. Some people disagree with that. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Medicare. Every Republican I have on our Congressional Corner show talks about how they're just trying to save Medicare from itself. What do you make of that?
I think they're not being straight with the American people. The Republican Party has been the plan that they all voted for, because the Ryan budget, I think, got every Republican vote but two or three, is for basically voucherizing, privatizing Medicare. And that's not saving Medicare from itself. That's ending Medicare as we know it. And the plan that Ryan proposed would have the average Medicare recipient pay $6,000 more out of their pocket than they do today. Now, there are ways to make Medicare. Here's what I like to say about Medicare. It gives great health care very inefficiently. The trick is to keep the great health care and drive out the inefficiencies. Sure. And a lot of those on the other side of the aisle want to keep the inefficiencies because they're in hock to the, you know, they're in
providers
where they agree with the providers and get rid of the basic health care benefits.
So help us a little bit with what it's like to be a senator. We only have a couple of minutes left, but you know, it's a tremendous job.
Well, let me tell you a story. Important. The first job I had, I was 14. I wanted to help my family out. That's when you could get working papers in New York.
Working papers.
Was a summer.
I remember that.
Yes. Do they still have working papers?
I have no idea.
Neither. We're too old. But it was a summer. And I got a job running a Mimeo machine. For your younger listeners, there was something before Xerox machines.
Indeed,
and you'd type
was.
Out a stencil, put it on this clunky old machine and crank it.
And get high on the smell.
Well, some people did,
yeah.
Alan. In any case, so I'd get to this little 3-foot by 3-foot room, no windows, at 9 a.m. Most of my friends didn't have to get a job. So they were at the beach playing basketball, trying to pick up girls, which is what 14-year-olds did. We didn't pick up too many, but we tried. And I'd be in this room, cranking the Mimeo machine in this windowless room. So I get there at 9. I look at my watch. 9:15, 9:30, 9:45. By 10 o'clock, I was going out of my mind. And I promised myself, swore to myself in this little room that summer when I was 14 that I would never find a job where I was bored, never go to a job where I'm bored. Guess what? I found it. Being senator, if you do it right, keeps you busy all the time. In fact, when you go to bed at night, you haven't accomplished all the things that you set out to do in the morning, by definition almost. But it's exciting, it's exhilarating, you're able to help people, make people's lives better, which is really very fulfilling, and it's filled with variety. I mean, every moment I'm doing something different. You have to like people. You know, I sit on an airplane and I ask the person sitting next to me, who's a total stranger, their life's story. People are interesting. And if you like people and you like helping people and you want to be very busy and you like variety and you have a lot of energy, that's essential. Senator's a great job.
You know, people sometimes may think of politicians all being brash. I find you very approachable in the rest of it. Hubris and anger and seems to me to be the death knell of politicians. Why do they do it? You're around them. Why do they do it?
Well, I guess there are some who are not happy in their jobs, and there are others who, you know, I mean, you can be forceful without being mean or being angry. I try not to be angry. I always look for the good in people. If I meet someone, even someone who I don't particularly like, I say, what's the good in them? Or at the very minimum, I say, let me try to walk in their shoes for a minute and see how they feel and what they think.
Well, you're so nice to be with us and to come into the studios, Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer is the senior U.S. senator, a Democrat who's been in the Senate since 1999. Thank you so much, Chuck.
Alan, great to be back.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.